Hello and welcome to a packed tripe supper. We've got Phil Talentire, Anthony Vickers, Chris Garbutt, and myself, Dom Shaw. Chris, I'll start with yourselves. I remember when us three recorded a podcast a few weeks ago, and it was after the Sheffield United game, and it's safe to say that the atmosphere was gloomy and grim. We're going to talk about how things have changed in the last few weeks. Obviously, looking back on that Derby game, Garbs, you were in the away end, and from where we were sat, it looked class in there.
Yeah. Excuse the croaky voice. Just about getting me.
This is four days.
Just about getting my
voice.
You
just got in, haven't you? You just come in now from the match.
It was it was a big day for Borough all round, really, from start to finish. Result was brilliant, performance to match, and a cracking atmosphere in the away end too. Probably the best performance on the pitch. This season, and certainly the best away game off the pitch too that I've enjoyed. So great weekend. Got to follow it up now.
You go home and away, as we say each week. How has it changed in the away end in the last few weeks? Because I noticed at Bristol City, and you know, whether it was more relief of the winning a must-win game, but it seemed at the end of that game that at long last, you know, there was almost this collective feeling of we might be onto something here, and that continued. I mean, the full-time celebrations at Derby kind of really felt like it, you know, something was happening all at once.
Yeah, I mean, the away day, the Borough away are always good no matter what. Going through this season, it's been, you know, we've just enjoyed the away games for what they are, not without ever really expecting anything to materialise with this season. But I think certainly after the Bristol home game and then on Derby on Saturday, it was you know, change. I think we've mentioned it a couple of times, haven't we? It's changed from probability, possibility to probability now, and I think fans are really gearing up for a hot end to the season.
I mean, the position they're in now, it'd be disastrous if they dropped
that. It's funny. I mean, the landscape has changed completely in the space of a fortnight. You mentioned the Sheffield United game there. Well, that was a disastrous night because not only did Borough lose and fail to perform against one of their rivals, but every single result went against them that night. And you came away thinking, you know, we were going into that run of tough games against big rivals and thinking that the team still had that massive fatal flaw that they couldn't beat sides around them. And then you fast forward to the Bristol game where after that game, they could have been anywhere between 5th and 10th. And I think most people were genuinely surprised that to come away after the rest of the results went the right way again to find suddenly we're in 5th, in pole position, in the driving seat. The good thing about Derby is they went there, it was the highest stakes possible, and they delivered. And that's the first time, I think, all this season where they've done that in such an emphatic style and done it over 90 minutes.
90 minutes as well.
When the questions were being asked, they did it. They delivered. They put in a very good performance. They had good balanced, strong at the back, created chances. You know, and it was the time when if typical Borough was going to emerge, it would have been that day.
Yeah, I think what's key now for I'm sure the Pulis enjoyed the victory on Saturday. I'm sure the players did. But I guarantee yesterday morning, it would have been nothing's achieved yet. We're not in the playoffs yet because the pendulum can quite quickly swing, like we've seen, you know. And a result against Borough's favour tonight at Pride Park, and a bad day at the office on Saturday, and all of a sudden you're neck and neck with four, five, six teams again. And Borough need to stay focused, and they've got a big game on Saturday against Millwall, and they need to get the job done. You know,
the thing I've noticed in the last couple of days is Neil Harris, for example, has said that he thinks Borough are now nailed on for a top six finish. Gary Rowett was almost suggesting afterwards, after the game as well, that you know his focus now is only on getting sixth place. If the teams below are realising that, and a kind of, you know, Rowett talked about how Borough are finding momentum at the right time, blah blah blah, Villa will realise that as well, won't they? Because a couple of weeks ago, Villa will probably be looking and thinking, if we finish fourth, it doesn't matter who finishes fifth, because we've been, you know, the rest of the teams have been that hit and miss and that poor all season. That's why there's this gulf in class and the huge gulf in points. But suddenly, Borough looked like a team who you wouldn't fancy playing in the playoffs.
No, I mean, even when Borough were looking as outsiders to get in the top six, I felt that the kind of team, bear in mind that Borough will probably have home advantage first, the kind of team who would keep it tight, maybe just take a one goal lead somewhere And I think if you go into a playoff semi-final second leg with any sort of lead, it's pressure, huge pressure on the home side, particularly a team that's been a front runner like a Fulham. I mean, Fulham will be desperate to avoid a repeat of the last couple of seasons, won't they, where they missed out when everyone was tipping last season, certainly everyone was tipping them to fly through the playoffs. No one will fancy playing Borough, but it's true, because Borough lost Patrick Bamford for a huge game at Derby County and were able to pick a £15 million striker. It's a huge advantage in this situation. Borough had Grant Ledbetter injured or suspended recently. They had an Adam Clayton to come in, and he was outstanding, wasn't he, at Derby? Borough do have quality in the squad, and I think the league position this season has masked that a little bit. I think people are kind of looking at the squad and think, well, it's not that good. I think most managers, even after the season Borough have had, would still love to have some of those players in their squad and available for selection.
But you couldn't argue with Harris, could you, when he said with the summer investment there should be chance?
Oh no, I think we are. I'd say that it's been, if Borough don't go up this season, whatever happens, it'll have been a big disappointment. I think we all, personally I did at the start of the season, thought Borough would be one of the two teams at the top pushing. And if they didn't finish in the top two because there was some real stiff competition, I think Borough have generally underperformed, and I think we're just starting to see now. I think what is critical and what we've seen all season, we've all talked about it, when Borough played the lesser teams, if you want to put it like that, they've been good enough to put them to bed. And in the past, we've maybe seen examples when that hasn't been the case. The problem's been, of course, all season is beating the teams above and around Borough. Well, they're starting to now, get that bad habit out of the way at a really good time. I thought Saturday was terrific. I thought the fans were terrific. It felt like all the ducks were all of a sudden in a row. The team shape worked well. Everyone seemed to be understanding what the game plan was. I do think the fans had a massive part to play on Saturday. You saw the team walk out in a hostile environment. I like Pride Park. And you're looking across and there's that big, more than a corner.
But it looked fast with the white and red as well.
Borough had a big area, and I think it was the south east stand, over 3,000 fans in there. When you're a player walking out on a pitch in a hostile environment, it must give you a lift when you think, you can hear your fans, you can see them. It must, can you imagine, best will in the world if that had been a Millwall in the middle of the season going to Derby? There'd be 150 fans in there. And I know it's probably a bad example because they're doing well, but it's got to be a bonus.
Well, Millwall have sold, or had sold as on Monday, I think 900 tickets for Saturday, which probably wasn't helped by the half-five kick-off. What has changed then on the pitch, Bristol City and Derby, since that dreadful, and I mean, that performance at Sheffield United, the first half, was as bad as it's been all season. Mm. It was as bad as it was under, in the low points under Monk. Yeah,
we said it was like Bristol away, didn't we?
Yeah, it was as bad as Bristol City and the Millwall game. And we said this morning that Neil Harris talked about how Millwall beat Borough in December, but we'll come up against a completely different side, won't they, on Saturday? Mm. But what has changed? What has been the noticeable differences?
I think Vic mentioned it earlier, but Borough have shown in patches and spells and flashes throughout the season that they can do it. But it's only been really the last two games, the last 2 weeks, where they've been able to sustain a high level of performance throughout a 90-minute match. And that's key, being able to go throughout a full game and dominate the game like they have done against the last two fixtures. I personally think that when Ledbetter was out injured, Borough were doing well. He came back in, but a bit of a sticky patch, and then obviously he got suspended again, and we've won the last two fixtures with Adam Clayton in the middle of the park. I think I've mentioned on this podcast a few times throughout the season, I think the balance is better when Clayton plays. It allows Besic and Housen to go forward and support the lone striker, which is crucial in the system that they do. Obviously, the emergence of Traore the second half of the season has been a big season defining bonus for Borough. And I think Pulis is just starting to, obviously he's coming and he's only made one signing that really plays. So he's got a squad full of players that are not really his players he's never worked with before. And maybe it's taken him two, three, 4 months to get them drilled and playing and understanding the way that he wants them to play and carrying out the roles that he's wanting them to. And I think we are really sort of starting to see that now. Every single player knows exactly what he wants them to do. You can see that in the way they play, can't you?
I don't think you should underestimate, by the way, the key moments going your way or not going your way. You know, that that stupid header early on Saturday, yeah, it was Bradley Johnson, I think, wasn't it? That goes another yard to the left, and he's given Derby the lead, and the whole, you know, the whole season can change. And whether you say that's luck or whether that's Burrow just enough to defend that situation, you can put it how you will. At this time of the season, it's all about making the most of the breaks when they go your way, and I think that's what Burrow are doing now. You know, that if Derby had taken the lead in that situation, who knows how the game would have turned out, but they didn't, and Burrow were good enough to exploit that and to make them pay for missing that big chance.
Well, if you're looking at moments like that, I thought Friends equaliser against Bristol City, because Burrow had started slowly, and had they gone in at half time still 1-0 down, or had Bristol City almost been given chance to just shut up shop and start to frustrate, then the atmosphere in the Riverside could have turned to a bit of frustration. But as soon as Friend equalised there, they kicked on, didn't they?
I think Borough were up. Even when Bristol City, you know, went 1-0 up, I thought Borough dominated that game from start to finish.
I think every department now is comfortable and the balance is right, and that's partly to do with the same team roughly playing week in, week out. Changing tack in mid-season can be a very big risk, because you're introducing areas of uncertainty, bringing in new players, a new system, a new tempo, and that when you drill players to play in a certain way, then suddenly ask them to change. In the high pressure situations, they sometimes revert back to what they've been drilled to do, while other players around them are doing something different. And it's those little fractional moments where you win and lose games, and I think the template that Tony Pulis has stamped on the team is starting to really bed in now. They're stronger at the back. They score goals. I think is it 12 games now since Borough haven't scored?
Yeah, we mentioned it on the...
Every match since Cardiff, is it, that they've scored? And that breeds a confidence. You know, if you know that your defence is rigid, and if you know that you've got a goal in you, and you know that if you score first, you tend to win, I think that gives people that little extra edge. And it probably plays against the opposition team as well. The opposition team will know that Borough can score. And if they do score, we've got a real problem. Then you have the tactical poser that you give the opposition with Traore. And there's no getting away from that. Even on days when he isn't at his best, he terrifies the opposition defence. He forces them into making tactical changes. And if they're making tactical changes, that introduces areas of uncertainty in the opposition. And I think that's what's happened, is that those fine margins that, you know, that managers talk about, I think the balance has swung the other way now. And the fine margins in the Borough half, I think the areas of uncertainty have been ironed out gradually. And I think it's the opposition now who have got those areas of uncertainty. What the hell is Traore going to do? You know, where's Ayala at this free kick? And that's forcing other teams to make changes.
I mean, the cleverest single thing that Tony Pulis did, taking over, and you look at back now, and if he doesn't do it, I don't think Borough finishing the top six, is decide that he's more excited about what Adama Traore can do than what he can't do. And he took a punt. We all said, didn't we, after Bristol City away, well, there's one player who will not feature in the new manager's regime, and that'll be Adama Traore. He's finished as a Borough player. He's had so many chances. He's not taken them. I remember speaking to some of the lads who were at Bristol City, and they said, well, that's him gone. That's him done now. That's his chance. He's blown it. And Tony Pulis has come in and done that thing that a clever manager does and thinks, right, who can win me football matches? And he's seen, you know, we've all seen it in little bursts, haven't we? But he's seen it and think, right, I'm prepared to put up with the moments where he goes AWOL or he runs into a blind alley, because two or three times he gets it right will be enough to beat teams, and that's proven time and time again. It's the way he rode that tackle at Derby was brilliant.
Doesn't that also play into the thing about tightening the defence up?
Yeah.
Because with Ryan Shotton behind him rather than an attacking fullback, those areas of uncertainty behind him have been pretty much eliminated. So when his erratic nature, if you like, isn't causing a problem every single game because there's something solid behind him. There's a platform there to allow him to express himself.
I think the thing is here, we're talking about almost looking back at the difference, the changes Pulis made. But you forget that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Sheffield United was one of the worst performances of the season. At Burton, Borough were dreadful and deserved nothing. At Brentford, it was very much a defensive show and a settle for a point. So although we're talking about the change we make, I think more specifically it's what's happened in the last couple of weeks, because going in that Bristol City game, it was all or nothing. If you'd lost that, you'd have gone to Derby, chins would have been down and you'd have been looking at it. So if you look at it the last few weeks, I think Traore's got back on Song, because when he came back from international duty, as Pulis touched upon, he was contained by Forrest to a certain extent. He was very quiet at Burton, wasn't he? And then there was another game. Sheffield United took off at half time. So I think against Bristol City, he looked back to himself. Set pieces, I know Borough have always made a big thing of set pieces, but suddenly they're scoring a lot more prolifically. I mean, Vic, you've done a piece saying that they scored 11 since Pulis came in.
Yeah, 11 out of the 33 goals.
But five have been in successive games. Yeah. So five have come in three games, and then six came in 3.5-4 months before that. And the other one, Gabs, what you touched upon is Adam Clayton. I think he's given... I think for me, one of the big things in the second half at Derby was not just how many chances Borough were creating, but how they were falling in the midfield. As Besic scored one and should have scored the second when he shot wide in the box, Housen hit the bar. Mm. There was a time when Borough's midfielders aren't popping up in those areas. Yeah. They're not the ones getting those chances.
As much as we speak about balance, and you know, you can pick three of the best midfielders in world football and put them in the midfield, but if the balance and the chemistry...
Gerard Lampard,
you know, if the chemistry's not right, it doesn't work, it doesn't function in a team and in 11. And as much as I like Grant Leadbitter's will to win, his leadership qualities on the pitch, Grant Leadbitter likes to get forward and support, you know, as Besic and Housen do too. So I think it's a little bit muddled when the three of them play. You know, Besic naturally wants to go forward. He's been told by Pulis to go forward, but you know, when he looks about and he sees Housen and Leadbitter up, he feels as though he's got to drop back. And I think it's disconnected. Whereas Adam Clayton is very, very good at what he does.
I don't think you're underestimating what the difference that Alan made on Saturday. He was virtually playing as the bottom of a midfield diamond.
Reading the game.
He was stepping out. Yeah. That's why I think Derby found it so hard to create. Ben was sitting back, Ayala was pushing outside the... It's a bit of a gamble, I suppose, if you're not confident that you're going to make the ball. Mm. But time and again, Ayala, making that challenge, reading, cutting out the pass. And to me, that he was almost playing as a midfielder, a deep midfielder for me on Saturday.
What did we make of the penalty?
I don't think it would have been given as a penalty if it was on 70 minutes. Or 80 minutes.
Because I was sat next to Jeff Winder in the press box, and in the first half there was a corner, and Jeff had said, you know, watch Ayala, you know, be careful with the arms, be careful with the arms. You're going to get caught, the referee, you know, you're going to get done.
One of these days he's going to get caught.
So you wonder if the referee saw him do it four or five times, saw it later on and thought, you know what, I've seen you do it half a dozen times now, I'm going to have to punish you. He has to be careful, doesn't he?
I don't think it was a penalty, personally. I've seen it in slow motion from a couple of angles, and I don't think it was a penalty. I think it was 50-50, both bodies were together and they both fell over.
I'm surprised not more hasn't been made about the original penalty shout, friend on Vidra.
No, I haven't seen a replay.
The championship didn't show the replay of that one, and I've yet to see it again. Fair play to Gary Rowett, he didn't make a big fuss about it, did he? The only point he made was, why would somebody go down in that position when he's clean through on goal? But I don't think he'd had a good look at that. But from my angle, and a few people around me, we all said, that was a tight one.
You talked about midfield there, about Clayton and Leadbitter. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, because you're talking about Clayton or Leadbitter given Besic and Housen that licence to roam, but you're saying that Leadbitter likes to move forward. So is it not a case of Clayton starts and Leadbitter's almost in the mix with the other three?
Absolutely.
Three battling for two of the more advanced midfielders.
That's exactly how I see it, yeah. And at the minute, I mean, I don't know whether you guys agree.
Clayton starts ahead of Besic.
Clayton plays as the holder, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his job.
That's his job.
What he's good at.
But it's seen as though, at the minute, there seems to be this Clayton or Leadbitter.
Is it
Clayton and then Leadbitter or Housen or Besic?
I mean, I've said for months and months and months that he starts every game for me, Clayton, and then it's up to the other three to jostle through the two positions. I don't know whether you agree, but I think Johnny Housen plays a lot better than he does. He plays a lot better when he's got Adam Clayton behind him. He likes to go forward and support, and I think he's more adventurous when Clayton plays, and we see the best of Johnny Howson when Clayton plays. Mo Besic is quite clean, you know, more natural going forward and supporting. He's good with his feet, he can run the ball.
Brawler, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's just an overrated.
I mean, coming back to what you said earlier on about Adama Traore being back on song, I think there's a case to be made that Mo Besic is back on song as well, because he had a couple of very flat games when he came back from international duty, and that did leave a marked lack of intensity in the midfield. And he, the last two games, he's been.
I don't think it's a coincidence that those players almost all simultaneously started to look a bit jaded, because I think I might have said hardly any of them had played any football when they came to Borough. Besic hadn't, Adama Traore hasn't played a full season before for a long time. He looked tired, didn't he? Especially, you know, he didn't really come in. Obviously, he'd been involved up until Christmas, but he's played start after start after start. So those kind of players, your Besic's and people like that, Traore and one or two others, I think it was just inevitable that they might have a lull. It's just unfortunate for Borough that they seem to have it at the same time. And I wonder if that's something that Tony Pulis has taken notice of and perhaps just given them a bit of a break.
Yeah. And both went away on that in national junior. I mean, really, with Besic, because Pulis does, he took him off, didn't he, on 60, 70 minutes, wherever it was at Derby. That fortnight off had probably done him good, wouldn't it, had he not been away on national junior.
What you'd like to think and hope now is that, you know, definitely two, potentially five games to go, is that the adrenaline as a professional footballer now, with what got the gauntlet that you've got set out in front of you, and the possibilities available to you now, is that the adrenaline's just going to kick them on and push them over the line now. You know, this must be like, as a footballer now, you must look at this and just think, this is what I'm a professional footballer.
Well, Pulis has been trying to get at that, hasn't he?
Emotionally, it's quite an intense period, but if you look at the games, they don't really come that thick and fast. You know, Borough playing pretty much a game a week, apart from the semi-finals where one's quite hot on the heels of the other. The playoff final isn't until May the 26th, I think it is. So we sat here in April. It's a full month to play, hopefully, five games. It's not an onerous schedule by any stretch, but obviously mentally it'll take its toll, particularly the playoff semi-final. But I mean, if Borough can get done and dusted against Millwall, then you've got, you can't think Ipswich, well, you might decide to rest one or two, depending how important he thinks the battle for fifth and sixth is. If that's still up for grabs, you might be wary about that, but you might just take an opportunity to rest one or two of the key players and think, right, okay, he's looking a bit jaded, he's, you know, he's, players like Ben played so much football, give him a shot, send him away for four or five short, you know, short break to Marbella or something like that, which other managers have done in the past. Karanka did it, didn't he, a few times when he saw a player just start to show signs.
He Marbs, Karanka.
Oh, he was in Marbs, yeah. But, you know, that might be an option. I don't know if Tony Pulis is a send them to Marbella for a few days kind of manager. It might be more Catrick for a workout on the army assault course. But
it's going to be really interesting this year, and it's different from the last time we competed in the Championship playoffs. Is the, like you mentioned, I think there, Phil, that the difference in time between the second leg of the semi-finals and the final,
12 days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big spell that. And if you're bouncing, you just sort of, you know, you've got the momentum and you just won a playoff semi-final and you're at Wembley, you'd almost go and play it the next day, wouldn't you?
There's a lot of build up in handling the emotions and all that.
I mean, was it Huddersfield last season who put a weakened team out on the last day and got beat?
It's dangerous to do that.
And actually, clearly they got away with it because they got promoted, so whatever you do and you get promoted, fine. But I always think that's a bit of a risk. You
know, switch back on element to
you can't,
it's,
yeah.
It's difficult, you know, yeah, it's like you want to almost keep players at a certain level of intensity without obviously draining them emotionally and physically. You don't want to kind of have one foot on the beach. So I think it's a difficult balancing act. I think I go back to what I'm saying about the schedule. It's almost too slack.
Well, but Borough's potential possible opponents in the playoffs is Aston Villa. And it's going to be an interesting one to see how they perform over the last couple of weeks of the season, because they have been nailed on.
They can do well, can't go up realistically.
They're not going to drop out the playoffs. So what do? Do they go hammer and tongs for the last two games? Does he rest? But then if you rest players and their mindset drops 10%, to then say, right, it's playoff semi-final time, switch back on. It's tough.
I'm worried about, I don't want to see Borough put in another Sheffield United, Brentford away kind of performance between now and the playoffs, because They could do that and still get in the playoffs, but I think mentally that's damaging. I think I'd like to think we're all in a position where the first leg of the playoffs, if Borough hopefully get there, where we're thinking they're going into that on the back of several good results. You know, came back to beat Bristol City, really good performance against Derby, put Millwall to bed at home, routine victory over Ipswich on the final day of the season. It'd be nice to think you could suddenly say there's signs there that Borough are in form going into the playoffs, rather than it's three steps forward and then the odd one back. So
I mean, that Ipswich game, we don't know as yet as to whether how much it'll be riding on it. But and God, I don't want to tempt fate with this. If you were to pick a perfect fixture at the minute, that'd be right up there, because. Yeah. Not only can they not influence anything in terms of league position, and they're going to finish 12th, 13th, 14th, but the season can't end soon enough to get this whole McCarthy thing completely over and done with. The fellow who's in charge at the minute has made it clear that he's only stepping in until the end of the season, that there's the uncertainty over the manager. So you are in a pleasant position there, regardless of whether you need to win to guarantee yourself a place in top six, or you need to win to hopefully build on the momentum of a win over Millwall. Mm.
I think it's a huge boost that Mick McCarthy isn't in charge for his last game.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think he'd have them up against the wall threatening to kill them if they didn't go out and finish the season with a performance.
Well, and the word is that the players were all on McCarthy's side, and they'd have wanted to put in one final show.
It feels like at the moment they're literally on the beach already.
Oh, yeah.
As you said, the caretaker manager, they've even scheduled this 40th anniversary of the FA Cup victory over Arsenal on the same day as the match, so it's going to be happy clappy wavy end of season. Sure, they'd want to finish with a decent performance, but really it's all on you do sometimes suffer when you play a team that's got nothing to play for, but all the signs are that there's no way Ipswich should be giving Borough a torrid time on May the 6th,
especially if we've got something to play for, you know. I remember going to Sheffield Wednesday a couple of seasons ago.
When they had to win the steel.
Yeah, to win. Oh. And honestly, we were... They might as well have had the flip-flops on Borough that day.
Well, they did, didn't they?
Yeah. They were so on the beach, it was unbelievable.
That's the thing. They're the fixtures you want, aren't they, later on? Just quickly, we'll do a longer, more designated, more specific pod on this at the end of the year, on players of the year. But Ramsden's put out their six candidates. Now, apologies for this, because I've written them down when I've come in and I can only got five. So they've got Randolph Traore, Bamford Ayala, Samba Longa. And who was the sixth?
Stewie,
right. I can't remember a season where it's been as difficult to think of a player of the year.
It's the player of the year bit that's problematic, because obviously Adama has been the explosive, eye-catching, sexy individual that's got people excited, but he hasn't done it over the course of a year. It's the year bit that's the problem. If at Christmas you'd have been drawn up the list, it probably would have had Cyrus Christie and Fabio on it.
Mm. Yeah. So what do you judge it on impact? Although Traore hasn't done it for a full season, well, his impact in the second half.
Your most consistent 6, 7, 8 out of 10 players, probably Darren Randolph and Ben Gibson for me. They're the only two players really on that list who have had a steady season from start to finish. Sorry, not on the list. I know Ben's not on this, but the two players who've had a kind of a pretty steady season. I mean, Ayala, discussed before, has had great performance against Derby, he's been very good second half of the season, but he was getting pelters earlier in the season, and
he disappeared for several months.
It wasn't even in the team for the first. You know, it was Dale Fry was the regular, wasn't he?
Well, his season started with a shocker against Wolves, didn't it?
Exactly. Gibbo not on the list.
No, you've got players like Trier, who you couldn't seriously consider before January. Frankly, you've got Stewie, who would probably win it if it was decided on the 1st of January, because he was great first half of the season, defied his critics. But as I think has been really overshadowed by Traore, is the most important attacking player.
Even Stewie, you would say that over the course of the season, he's been shifted around from one position to another. Yeah. He's had 3 weeks spells where he's been really good, then they've moved him somewhere else, and he's had 3 weeks where he's been lacklustre and not really influenced games. So he's had a very, very patchy season too.
Stewie got a disabled player, supports player of the year, didn't he?
Did he? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, a Samba Longa, you think he hasn't played in the second half of the season, he's been a bit part figure. I read before we came in here that he's a goal away from matching his best ever championship tally, and you think, well, you know, he's top scorer. If someone at a seven, you come in that a Sambalonga would get 15 goals, you'd have thought, well, I'd hope for 20. Yeah. But if someone had said he'll get 15 goals and he'll only start games for the first half of the season.
Yeah, well, the thing is, was it November?
He was on for 20 then, wasn't he?
He had 12 but before the end of November. Yeah. He scored two against Birmingham. Yeah,
they were the last ones. That was the start of the massive gap, wasn't it?
At the time, we were thinking he's on 30 goals a season.
I know.
So who would it be if you had to pick one now?
It's really tough. Just without dodging the question, I'd be really interested to know who the players' player of the year was. If you talk to them and say, look, who's been the man all season? Mm. Who's just been steady? I bet they've got a lot of time for Stewie within the dressing room.
By the same criteria about you mentioned the 6 or 7 out of 10 every week, Johnny Howson's got to be in with the show. He's one of the few people that's been a fixture right the way through. He had a slow start, but then has got to the point where he's completely reliable. Maybe not spectacular, but he's there every week, in and out, working his nads off, and he's got to be up there. I think the Ramsden's thing is based on the number of man of the match awards that you've clocked up, which obviously that mitigates to, you know, strikers. Yeah. Bamford had his spell where he was scoring a lot of goals. Yeah. Traore's been the match winner, so they obviously get clocked up. Yeah. The player's player tends to be someone who's the most efficient in their position, the most reliable in their position, and that rewards.
Who's top of the stars?
Traore.
I'd be tempted to say, based on the fact that, like a good referee, you never really mention a goalkeeper unless he's having a rick. I think Randolph's been as steady as anybody. It'd be very, very, you know, in terms of just a player who's rarely made a mistake. I know he's had a couple of slight clearances, but over 46 league games,
very solid,
and cup ties and what have you. I think he's been fine. And you wouldn't, you know, I don't think you'd have too many arguments if you named him. But the emotional choice will be someone like a, you know, you could the Traore argument is the same argument where Steven Gerrard's the man of the match in the European Cup final that they won. In the first half, I think the whole team, including him, were dreadful. They were absolutely awful. Yet without him in the second half, they don't win the European Cup. So, do you say the same thing about Burra? Forget what Traore didn't do in the first half of the season. If he doesn't do what he does in the second half of the season, Burra don't touch wood finish in the top six, and who knows, go on to win promotion. So, there's a lot of different ways of approaching it.
Do you know, just going back to what you said there, Vic, I mean, I don't think that you can, I don't personally think you can give him a shout for player of the season, but Johnny Hodgson's a funny one with regards to his performances, because I think he's very been underrated by Borough fans this season. I mean, I think he's had a cracking probably last three quarters.
Managers
of the season.
Like him. I bet the managers.
Managers
like
do.
Him.
But do you know what? He did have a sticky slow start, and I think because Borough fans, got into the mindset that Borough hadn't started the season well, he carried that tag for a long time. Oh, yeah. Even though his performances were probably meriting more than what he was actually being given. It took him a long time to shake that he's been a waste of money tag.
And if you factor in the fact that there was 3, 4, 5, 6 tactical changes, formational changes in the first 2 months. It's pretty difficult for any player to be consistently good when you're moving from a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, 3-4-3, 4-4-2, whatever it was. I think it's fair play to Johnny Howson for, you know, just getting his head down, as you say.
Forshaw gave us some insight when in that interview when he spoke at his first Leeds press conference, and he said that there was almost too much competition, and you'd play well one week and the next week you'd be out. It was clear.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it, that Monk was a manager who shuffled them around too much.
So it would be yours then, Garbs, if you had the big one. Yeah,
Traore.
Yeah, I think I'd go Traore, because I think if Borough finish in the top six, they finished in the top six because the second half of the season and the impact in the second half of the season, he's been the man.
Can I just shout up for Danny Ayala, who I think has been absolutely staggeringly good, both as a man mounting defender and 7 goals in 22 games since New Year's Day. Yeah. It's quite spectacular.
Against a good second half of the season, hasn't he?
And if you think about the number of games that Borough have won because of set plays, you've got to say he's every bit a match winner as Traore has been.
Traore could get player of the season and young player of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
How old is he, 22?
22. And finally, before we wrap up, the playoff picture. Obviously, this was recorded before Derby play Cardiff, weather permitting, as Neil Warren
said. I just want that.
Yeah. What's our take on that sixth spot now? Well, fifth and sixth spot. Borough have got themselves in a position that you'd have absolutely snapped someone's hand off for a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Vinny and me have been rattling on about Brentford all week. Yeah. And the fact that they're now a point back, or they were a point back, and they've got Barnsley and Hull to play. I know it's hard to say because this is before the Derby Cardiff game. Well, what do you reckon?
Well, Brentford have got the form, they've got the momentum, and they've got two of relatively general fixtures. So for me, I think Brentford, it's theirs to win.
Who did Millwall finish with?
Borough, Villa.
Yeah.
So it's a tough run. Could be Brentford. I think Derby, if you look at Derby, you can feel the belief's gone.
Well, Derby, you've got Cardiff Villa as well.
This is going out on Wednesday. Yeah, Derby 4.
Derby 4, just basing on what I saw on Saturday, it felt like, and even the way Gary Rowett was talking, and I thought he spoke really well and really honestly, it felt like Derby have accepted that they're not going to do it. The fans seem to have accepted it. I thought there would be more of a reaction to Borough's win, actually, from the Derby fans on the side. It was almost as though, we knew they were going to lose this game.
Seemed to me that everyone there, from fans to the reporters in there, to the players,
to the manager,
can't explain why on earth this happens every single year.
And that's a worry when a manager says, well, I've tried something different, it hasn't worked. You can't think, well, if the manager doesn't know how to put it right, nobody else can put it right.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, 3,100 Borough fans are singing "It's Happening Again," and there was a couple of sort of smittering to Derby fans joining in with them, wasn't there?
Yeah. It's Brentford Borough Wembley, is it?
My old man, he said before Derby, we were looking at the sort of playoff picture, and he said Brentford. He said that
in the final, Brentford Borough final.
Well, yeah, that his prediction is Brentford Borough final, but he said he thinks they'll get in the top six.
I think what
Borough need to do now is just forget about everybody else and just concentrate on beating Millwall on Saturday.
If we do, Tony Pulis.
Tony Pulis textbook. No, I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's true, isn't it? If we beat Millwall on Saturday, it doesn't matter what anybody else does. Our job's done. So that's what Borough need to focus on. And then when we are actually in the playoffs, then you can have a look and see who you might be playing. But
who would you like to see in there, though? Who would you
put it?
Yeah. In the top, because it's going to be probably Fulham, Villa, hopefully Borough, and one more.
I'd say that my personal opinion would be you want Fulham up and out of it.
Really?
Because I think Cardiff will go up. I think Cardiff's fixtures are so kind. They might have lost last night. We don't know yet. Yeah. But I think Cardiff's last two games.
The thing is with Fulham,
right? Reading, maybe, I think they'll do it.
Is last year Fulham motored and then fell away in the playoffs. This year they since Christmas their fans will have been in a mindset we're going to go up automatically. And if they don't, another thing that I've mentioned to you guys a few times is with Borough being away in the second leg, I don't think you want to be going to a 42,000 Villa Park packed out hot atmosphere. Whereas you go to Fulham, you know, they're a good club, but you know it's not exactly a raucous atmosphere at Craven Cottage, is it?
And see,
you get 6,000 tickets behind that goal as well.
I just think the thing with Villa, if you got them in a game, I know we're tempted to fate here, but if you were to beat Villa in the first leg and go there would be so much pressure on them.
I fancy Borough if Borough at home, and obviously we're assuming here that Borough get in the playoffs, generally fancy Borough at home to beat whoever they play. I think that's their best chance of getting through the playoffs. So you get somebody here, full house at the Riverside, maybe it's the Friday night match or even the Saturday evening, whenever it is.
Yeah.
And I think the place will be bouncing.
I'm dreading next week's trip with him. We've got Peter against Millwall and it's like, oh no,
well, you won't be in it, that's for sure.
If Derby beat Cardiff 4-0 tonight, we're going to have to chop off the last 10 minutes. Anyway, cheers fellas, thanks a lot and thanks for listening.